Mary Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
Our Southern California studios include Timmery's home today. So we've expanded our reach. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Don. Timmery joins us, unfortunately, over the phone today, but at least we have the phone. Hey, Timmery.
Hey, Don. That darn car trouble is making it difficult this morning.
It happens eventually. You may or may not know that Timmery is so kind and gracious as to commute quite a long distance here on a weekly basis to come up to the Orange County studios of Immaculate Heart Radio and do the show. And today, the car was just not cooperating. So, Timmery, thanks for joining us by phone. Lots to talk about today. We should probably start, though, with a mention about the huge tragedy. I mean, biggest storm in Texas history. I know we both have a lot of friends in Texas, and so obviously we're praying for them.
Right. And I mean, last I knew it was still raining out there. They do not know what the final damage will be. I think that you two, I had a friend on Sunday morning who texted, and they already had a foot of water inside their home when they left at about 9 a.m. Sunday.
I've always lived in a place where flooding's not a real big danger. We did live by a river growing up, and it did flood occasionally, but not in a really serious way. I got to be honest, that would freak me out. I watch the images of the people like getting into their attics and then getting somewhat trapped in their attics and getting, I mean, scary, scary stuff. And so everyone who is a part of the Cajun Navy, I don't know if you saw the boats that are all kinds of different boats, you know, sort of reminded me of the Dunkirk rescue a little bit, you know, made famous recently by the movie. Right. Everybody in every kind of boat they can out there rescuing thousands of people. Keep up the great work. I know we've got a lot of firefighters even from Orange County here in San Diego County out there helping the efforts. So let's keep praying and doing what we can to help them.
Absolutely. And I mean, like you said, the rescues have just been incredible. I mean, they have a do not call to 911 at this point because they know people are in homes waving out balconies saying, hey, save me. But if I'm not an emergency case right now, go get someone else is kind of the attitude they're taking.
It is nice. I mean, it's somewhat cliche, but it is nice to see people coming together. I mean, it's sad that it has to be a tragedy like this, obviously, for it to happen. But to see people of all colors, all religions, everything coming together to help out, that if there's a silver lining anywhere, maybe that's one of them.
Absolutely, especially at a time where we are seeing such, I think, a division politically, morally, sexually, racially, and just the attitude continues to build that we see other people as our enemies so easily, and sometimes maybe the allowance for these national disasters are a wake-up call for people.
Yeah, I hope so, because I mean, honestly, Timmery, I have been a little bit frustrated with, Frank, even some of my friends, you know, people that I are Facebook friends with, at least, in their reaction to some of the race relations recently. And, you know, generally we stay out of politics. But I think part of the story recently, especially, you know, with Charlottesville and now this last week in Berkeley, we had some more bad stuff riding. It seems like a discussion about race, again, a little bit cliche, but it is necessary. There's one aspect of this story. And we're not going to dig into all the various aspects of these various stories on race over the last week. But there's one aspect of it that I think does deserve a bit of attention. Are you familiar with the disease that affects small children called whataboutism, Timmery?
Whataboutism? What about this? Asking questions, you mean?
Not so much questions as blaming other people or deflecting the focus to other people when they get caught doing something. So, you know, little Johnny throws the ball through the window after he had just been told, hey, please take that ball out into the backyard or whatever. No, he continues, and there goes the ball through the window. And you say, Johnny, did you just throw that ball through the window? Yeah, but what about little Freddie? I mean, he smashed his friend's car, you know, just yesterday, right? Or what about, you know, you get caught cussing or something. Oh, but what about the guy next door? I mean, he says this and a whole lot more. Or, you know, what about them? They got caught watching porn, right? It's always about, hey, what about that other person?
It's this attitude that I can do something wrong because other people are doing something wrong, and what they're doing is much worse than what I myself am doing.
Yeah, and we see this not just with kids, I think, but sometimes on a very institutional level. In politics, of course, it happens when something happens in your party that you don't like. You immediately say, well, but what about the other party? You know, they did this, or they would have done this. And I see it even in the Catholic Church sometimes. I think of the priest scandal, of course, this terrible evil that occurred. And part of the response was, yeah, but what about the educational system? Or what about, you know, the whatever system where teachers are incarcerated at about the same rate or whatever? And, on one hand, I get it, Timory. I understand that you want to defend either yourself or your family or your institution because you see some good in it and you don't want it to be tarred completely. Like, hey, I'm not a terrible person, you know, and so I want to show that, hey, evil happens all around, or this is sort of a case where it happens many places and therefore maybe it's not quite as bad. And I don't know. I mean, I'm willing to grant even that it's not so much that it's not as bad. It's that, well, it happens, you know, like we can somehow defend me or my family or my institution or my political party because it happens on the other side. And as much as I don't like it, you know, I'm not a fan of, for instance, the Catholic Church, those who defend it like I do, right? You and me, we're out here defending and explaining the Catholic Church because we're Catholics. I've never been a huge fan of saying, yeah, but what about, you know, teachers or whatever?
I think more so, Don, all over around, like the point you're making is, we confuse very easily that because one person did something, that's what the whole representative of the entire group believes and stands for.
Yeah, right. We're trying to avoid that. And so I get it, right? Like, I get that there's good in me. There's good in my family. There's good in the Catholic Church. And therefore, it's sort of natural to want to say, well, what about? Even though I'm not, I think we should avoid it, right? I think we just accept the blame. Say, you know what? We're not talking about Freddie next door. We're talking about you, Johnny. You know, we need to deal with this sin. We're not talking about teachers right now. We're talking about priests or whatever. However, in this recent round of debate in our society, there is a whataboutism that I think is not defendable on any level. And that's when you have in Charlottesville a group of expressed white supremacists out there chanting evil slogans against Jews and blacks and every other people. And your response is, yeah, but what about the other side? At this level, you are defending, even though you don't think you're defending the white nationalists, you are, right? Like, even though you think, well, I'm just trying to show that there's evil all around. Okay, there is evil all around. Certainly the Antifa movement on the other side of that battle is evil, straight up. No question. Evil every which way. But what you are doing by saying what about is actually trying to say there is some good in whatever movement I'm saying, well, what about the other one? And as Christians, there's no way, Timory, there's no way we can say that we're going to find some good. And again, I don't think that's what people are saying. I don't think they're trying to say, let's find some good in this white nationalist movement. Some are, unfortunately, and I don't know what we're going to do, folks. If you're trying to find some good in the white nationalist movement, we've got problems. You know, we need to talk. But I think inadvertently, I just want to point this out, I think a lot of people inadvertently are defending the white nationalist movement, or if you're doing it on the other side, you know, fair enough. You know, you're defending Antifa by saying what about. And I just wanted to throw that out there. Like, when you say, well, what about, you know, the teachers who sexually abuse people, when you're trying to defend the Catholic Church, at least there's something good in the Catholic Church to defend. There's nothing good in the white nationalist movement to defend, and therefore we need to just avoid that whataboutism completely.
Well, and I think any act of terrorism, which they're even calling, for example, what happened in Charlottesville, an act of terrorism. It might not be Islamic terrorism. It might not be ISIS terrorism. But pointing and recognizing this is something bad. This is something that happened. I don't think there's anything wrong with comparing that there are a number of groups right now, even just the protests we saw with the Black Lives Matter group. And there were issues and there were violence taking place within those groups as well. Brutality from the police that have taken place in some situations and brutality against the police that have taken place. And not that I'm saying what about these different groups, but it's that we're literally saying these are issues that are taking place across the country. And at what point can we say, like you're saying, Don, this is something bad right here that is taking place and we need to acknowledge that rather than making an excuse.
Yeah, and I think even if we're not trying to make excuses, that's what happens when we put the focus on some other aspect of the story.
And well, that's where... Go ahead.
Well, and so when we come back, we're nearing the break here, Timmy. So when we come back, just a few more thoughts on this. But if you can't start with recognizing, I have no defense for what just happened. If a girl gets run over... there's no defense for that, right? There, you just say that's evil. When priests sexually abuse children, there's no defense for that. That's just evil. You just say that's evil. All right, you're listening to Don and Timmery. We will be back with Trending right after.
This is Trending with Don and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Before the break, Timmery, we were talking a little bit about race relations and how it is natural when we feel some affinity with a certain group or even just ourselves when we run into trouble to point to other errors in the culture, right? Whataboutism is what we've been calling it here on the show. And I didn't make that up. So that's been a news word lately, whataboutism. And I personally think that although I can understand it on some levels, like, you know, I'm trying to defend my family. And so my kid gets into trouble and I instinctively say, yeah, but what about the Smith's kid? You know, they did the same thing last week. And as parents, we don't really allow that with our kids, but at least I get it. Like, I understand why you want to defend yourself, your family, or the Catholic Church, or your political party even. I get it. I understand why the instinct is to say, yeah, but what about, you know, those Republicans or what about those Democrats? They do the same thing. However, when it comes to issues of race and violence, I'm just going to throw this out there. Unless you are okay with admitting I'm defending this, right? Like, unless you're okay with saying, yeah, the white nationalists, I'm defending them, or the Antifa movement, I'm defending them. Unless you're okay with defending it, you don't do the whataboutism. Don't do that, because then you are, by its very nature, that's what you're doing. You're somehow trying to find some good. And as Christians, here's my motive for this, Timmery. As Christians, you are defaming the gospel when you are defending evil. And so, again, I don't think most people set out to do it. I just think it's instinctual somehow, and I don't get it. I don't understand why the instinct is to, honestly, maybe it's because of politics. I don't understand why your instinct would be to find another evil to compare the white nationalist movement to. I don't get that, right?
For the reason for it. Right.
Like, I just think we say that's evil. Stop it. Don't do that. Don't associate it with that. I disavow. I mean, it's just terrible.
I think, Don, what's important here, really, in looking at that is recognizing, yes, we can't sit there and just not acknowledge bad for what's happening, but really look, why are we seeing activity such as this right now? Why are we seeing people in droves, whether it's radical Islam or this attitude of white supremacy or whatever it is, even if they're small groups and things taking place in different places, why is there this drawn? I think that this is part of what's been interesting for me from the Catholic perspective, looking at what people are struggling with right now. And even in some of the articles and things we've been reading, there are a lot of people who are identifying with extremist groups, and part of it is out of the frustration many young people are feeling, and even though they're not necessarily talking about this element, but a lack of faith, a lack of something to stand for, a tough job market, I mean, increasing student loans, people who are going, I mean, truly into such extreme debt, not able to start families, they're searching for love in the different forms of sexuality that they're facing, and you have this huge growth in this gender identity. We might even just call it, instead of the gender, you know, ideology, more so this identity crisis that so many people are searching for. And even some of the people who have been involved in some of these protests have spoken out talking about how, you know, I felt made fun of, I didn't fit in with people, I was looking for my community and identity. And for some reason, whether it's the LGBTQ plus movement, whether it's Islam, whether it's the white supremacist group, whatever it is, people are finding homes in places that are not their home, the church, and also that is not their home, their familial responsibilities and love of their family.
Yeah, fascinating article that I think first appeared in the Washington Post this week and is now also available at theweek.com by Terrence McCoy. And what he did is he went around at the white nationalist rallies and talked to six young men. They aged between 21 and 35 just to figure out why they're there. And I just want to clarify. So Timory, she just introduced the subject. We're going to examine why people become white nationalists. And you already mentioned it to me. I think it's very similar to why people become Islamists and why they travel to the Middle East. In fact, I've got a story from the UK talking about why people are radicalized there. I think it's actually very similar. I just want to preface this saying, again, we're not defending what these people are doing. There's nothing good. There's nothing defendable about this. And
right,
so
I think that's pretty clear too. I just think it's that we need to see, why are people so broken and looking with these groups?
Oh, exactly. Because in fact, it is partially, and this is what they bring out in this article and others, it's partially because the Christianity that they have experienced has been so weak, it hasn't actually offered the question or the answers that they've been looking for. And so you mentioned a few of the issues that they found. You have some people who grew up in very broken families, very poor situations, no real economic future for them, and essentially their life, they found, was pointless. The one young man lived with his parents and didn't really have any hope for the future, got searching around online, got into some chat rooms and some groups, and then decided he would go to one rally of a bunch of groups that he had found online. And when he got there, guess what? He found acceptance. He found meaning, he found purpose, and he found a sense of belonging, a family that he hadn't experienced other places. And he's like, this is what I've been looking for all my life.
And what's so important to recognize about this young man is, from a young age, he was diagnosed with a form of autism, Asperger's, and he has struggled with social elements in his life. He struggled, again, with fitting in. You have people who are struggling with same-sex attraction and gender dysphoria. And, I mean, these same people are then feeling that they find acceptance within the LGBTQ community. And you're seeing, yet again, this desire to fit in, this desire to be loved. And ultimately, Don, what people are looking for, that I think it stems back to this brokenness in the family, they're looking for unconditional love. And they never experienced it from their parents sometimes, maybe due to divorce and different circumstances. Or they just had this, you know, inner feeling that they weren't accepted. They didn't have that faith to ground them in who they were. And even in the midst of falling and sin and making mistakes or being confused, they didn't have that baseline to turn back to and get back up, pick their feet up, you know, go to confession, whatever it is, to keep walking forward.
It really reminded me, as I read this story at the Washington Post, of a story by Tim Lott that I've referenced several times over the years on the radio because it was just so striking. He wrote it after one of the bombings in London. I believe it was the 2005 subway bombing in London. And I'll link it. If you go to donjohnsonministries.org, you can find it there. The original link is not there, but I've pasted it on my website. And it is almost striking, this article, that the writer, Tim Lott, accurately understands why these young, frankly well-off, a lot of them had money, young British men were becoming Islamists. And he actually writes about them in a way that he's almost jealous of the fact that at least they found something. You know, I personally, he says, have not yet found it. Like Western materialism, things that Western society has offered me have not actually been fulfilling. And these people, they have found something that they find so fulfilling that they're willing to die for it. And he's almost nostalgic, like, oh, that's kind of, I mean, I don't, you know, of course, he's like, well, I don't want suicide bombers to keep going. But he's almost nostalgic for it. And I really do think it's a very similar mindset that the young British, you know, middle class men who are becoming Islamists, and there's quite a few of them, unfortunately, mm-hmm. you can make a pretty direct parallel to the young American men who are becoming white supremacists. And as Catholics, we have to be able to step in there and say, on one hand, listen, this is not the way. There's nothing defensible about what you're doing. But on the other hand, we should be able to say what you are looking for, that love, that meaning, the family, it's found here in Jesus and his church.
And that's part of, Jim, I like that you're talking about this, because part of it, if we look at this, a lot of this right now that's taking place, you know, I think we could also talk about the women's marches and talk about the issues there, but right now that's a different topic that I think we'll set aside for the moment. If you look at this, a lot of this activity, whether it's Islam or the white supremacy, is taking place with men. And you pointing that out, what we've seen in Europe, what we're seeing here in the United States, really parallels with the issue we're seeing, that men are so degraded in our society today. We've talked about that here on Trending, with what we've seen on television, with the breakdown we see in the family, with this intense radical feminism that really downplays masculinity, upplays femininity, but then at the same time says there's no difference between men and women. And with that, what you continue to see is that men are completely emasculated. And now they're searching for meaning. They're searching, and I don't want people to misunderstand this. You know, we'll say sometimes that men are looking for ways to live out their masculinity, and that is a good thing. They're looking for ways to show their strength and who they are, to protect, to care, all these different elements of who men are. They're looking to be active, but what's happening is that many men, in searching for this, are saying, oh, you're just being aggressive, or I don't need a commandeering man interrupting and entering into my life. I don't want to get married. I don't want to have a child right now. And men are constantly being told, what I was built to do, I cannot do. All I can do is work. I can't have a wife. I can't have a child, maybe because of the lifestyle they've chosen or because of the way they're being pressured. But now they're looking for outlets. And whether they're being mocked for riding big giant trucks and going off-roading or joining one of these groups, you're seeing ways for men trying to fit in and live life with meaning.
This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Good. growing up, my daughters were big fans of Miley Cyrus. Of course, she was called Hannah Montana then most of the time, and I didn't actually mind that. I thought that Hannah Montana presented a somewhat wholesome image. We didn't really watch the show that much, but from what I could tell, the songs, you know, her little pop songs seemed fine. And then, as is so often the case, you can almost mark your calendar by it. The young Disney pop princess, the wholesome look, turned into a, well, what would be a good term for it, Timory? Sex machine crazy person. They always do that. What's going on with it?
You know, she all of a sudden was sexually fluid. I mean, that tongue that drove me insane, that she was always sticking out. And I mean, different things like this poor girl, I mean, appearing on television in different concerts, just wearing suspenders. I think to summarize the whole thing, and it's funny because I was in studio training clients yesterday. I had a client that was getting over a shoulder injury, and I'm sitting there, and the song Wrecking Ball comes on. And I just go, oh, I hate this song so much. And it's funny because the studio owner knows to turn it off now, that song, anytime it comes up, because that song represents for so many people this just degeneration, this breakdown of who we are, of saying, I don't know what I am. I'm sexually fluid, and I'll go with the wind, whatever moral attitude that sounds nice and fine and fun is what people go for. And this is what happened to Miley.
Yeah. So, you know, we expected that. Again, it happens to just about everybody from Britney Spears on down the line. You can look at all of the young pop princesses that come out of sort of that Disney feel, and they, you know, hit their mid-teens and they want to break from the past and they've got to be hip and cool and whatever. And so they do go that way. But what's interesting is with her latest album release and the work she's done over the past few months, Miley Cyrus has taken another U-turn.
Right. She's making a comeback. And I hear it has something to do with her relationship that she's in as well, which, I mean, I think that straightens out a lot of people when they're looking at the seriousness of wanting to have a commitment, a long-term commitment. They kind of have to settle down. And it's interesting because she's spoken out of late about how this is the longest she's ever gone without indulging in pot. And how she's, I mean, really, truly proud of herself in many senses because she's disconnecting from all of the drinking and drugs that she had been participating in.
Yeah, this is fascinating. So not only has she stopped doing drugs, she stopped drinking, but she's put her clothes back on. You know, not all of them, but she's actually appearing, you know, in dresses, and she's got that farm girl sort of image, and the songs are a lot less abrasive. I know we've been playing a little Malibu in our house, I'll admit, and, you know, maybe it's not the height of, you know, musical excellence, but it's not the abrasive, sex-filled songs that we are used to. And you're right, it does seem, Timory, that a lot of this has to do with a relationship. And that strikes me like, oh, now that you have found someone that apparently, at least to some degree, you want to commit to, and I don't know all the backstory. I'm not claiming to read the gossip magazines or know everything about it. I'm looking at a story from National Review about Miley Cyrus at the moment, if that helps. But the fact that your relationship would cause you to rethink all of the promiscuous sexual images and the drugs and the drinking and the, you know, appearing naked on live broadcast TV, which she did as well, and think, huh, maybe that lifestyle wasn't quite as fulfilling and wasn't quite as conducive to long-term happiness as I thought.
Right, and I think that's something that we see for so many people. They're looking back and they're going, oh, it didn't make me that happy. And you know what's interesting is she performed just this past weekend at the VMAs, and her performance was, for me, just astounding. That, I mean, it almost brought tears to my eyes, truly. Seeing this girl who, and I was a little bit older than watching the Hannah Montana show, but my younger sisters loved it, and so I would see it as I would be in and out. And I mean, it was just a sweet, wholesome show for the most part. And then to see the change in her music, the change, I remember being so frustrated watching as she hosted the ball dropping, New Year's Eve big party, you know, you're watching on TV. And I just, at one point, my family, we said, never again, we're not watching that anymore. It was so just, I mean, truly, like, instead of ringing in the new year with excitement, you're just sad. And now here you are, you hear this song that she performed at the VMAs, younger now, and she's singing about how things don't stay the same, no one stays the same, and how things come down, and in part she's talking about a sagging body, right, and she's got all these cute old people dancing around her, and I mean, again, she's partially, clothed well in this video, but she's talking about how things change and how she feels younger now, and part of this youngness to her has to be with this release and removal from all of the drugs and alcohol and some of the crazy things she was advocating for.
Yeah, it turns out that at least for some people, you reach that stage in your mid-20s, hopefully at least by your mid-20s, where you realize that, oh, maybe your parents weren't as crazy as you thought when you were 15 and 16. You come back around to realize maybe they weren't completely idiotic. Hey, here's another interesting point about all this, especially for those of you who are interested maybe in becoming famous and selling a lot of albums or movies or whatever it is. It turns out that people don't actually like the hardcore, abrasive, very political, very sexually promiscuous, that sort of thing. They don't actually sell as many albums as when you come across as more family-friendly. And this applies across the board, and it's always been an interesting sort of weird irony, if you will. The artists in Hollywood, and I guess other places, but in Hollywood, you go in there and you want to... Supposedly, you want to go, I would think, and make something that people want to see. But that's not the only reason, of course. You want to express yourself and do something with meaning. And all of these artists, not all of them, I guess, but many of them end up being very political in their, you know, especially off-screen life. I think of Katy Perry as an example. So Katy Perry, I mean, she was absolutely at the top of the music world, probably the most popular artist in the world, selling millions and millions. And she gave all of that up, at least to some degree, cut off all her hair, became very politically active, very outspoken about things that do not unite the country. And now she can't sell out her concerts. Her album is tanking. People don't like Katy as much as they used to. And
it's so sad. I mean, her last album totally flopped.
Yeah. And I think what... On one hand, I can see, hey, she got the height of success. Obviously, that wasn't enough for her, as it never is, right? She didn't find meaning and purpose in abandoning her family's values and getting all of the fame and acclaim and all that stuff. Now she's turned to politics, I believe, in an effort to try to find some more meaning. You know, we've been talking about that throughout the show, trying to find something that's going to fulfill. Now she's not selling albums. And is she happy now? I suspect not. I don't know Katy personally, but I suspect probably not. And I just think, ultimately, again, you're made for love. Like, until you can sort of understand that, right? Like, find your meaning and purpose in your relationship with God and with others, you're going to be grasping at all these different straws.
Right. And I mean, just to seeing how her album Witness flopped, seeing how, you know, there's been an 89% sales drop, truly, in her sales. She's had to cancel 2 concerts now for next month, coming up with different excuses, and maybe something more is going on in her personal life, too, that we don't know about. Good. I mean, Lord only knows. I imagine these people sometimes just want a little bit of privacy. But here's another woman, for example, who's come out standing and supporting sexual fluidity, standing in for what they believe is choice. And, you know, the destruction and killing of the unborn children and the horrible impact it has on women. Yet, in the name of women, these women are out here saying, I want equality and acceptance for everyone. But we're seeing that it's leading to widespread brokenness.
One last fascinating point about that somewhat relates to what you just said, Timory. turns out a lot of people in the industry and among the among journalists are actually upset at Miley Cyrus. I'm sure they're happy with Katie for all her stuff, even if her album flops. But they're upset with Miley Cyrus for putting her clothes back on and for singing about actual love and fidelity in a relationship and all that. They're actually upset about it. And you think, hold on, she looks happy now. Why are you upset about women becoming happy?
Yes, and this is an exact example. When people try to turn around their lives, come out of the darkness of sin, brokenness, frustration, people criticize them. I mean, MTV is mocking Miley Cyrus right now for making this turnaround. And here we are seeing when someone is doing well, for some reason, even in our own lives, we like to destroy, criticize, bring down other people.
Yeah, it is really sad. And there does seem to be a little bit of what? Envy, or you're, what are you doing in trying to bring down Miley Cyrus for putting her clothes back on, for finding a relationship,
right,
for creating music that actually sells and is appealing, that a family person like me, and I'm with you, I did exactly the same thing. We did exactly the same thing as you, Timory, in watching the New Year's Eve thing. We shut it off and said, we're never going to watch the New Year's Eve thing again with this guy. And yet people are upset now that she's turning all that around and she's creating more family-friendly products. Something is strangely amiss here.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
You know, Don, last week we were talking a lot about work and how there's been a change in summer jobs. Fewer young people, specifically in high school, have taken summer jobs. We've also seen this attitude when people are entering into the workforce that not only are they often not working in their profession that they studied and prepared for, they're often having a hard time finding jobs. But then there's this shocking reality I have seen so many of my peers go through, of this attitude, you mean to say that I have to do things outside of exactly what I wanted to do in my job? Whether, you know, if you're event planning, you're actually going to have to do some heavy lifting along with coordinating and working with awesome corporate organizations. Or, you know, a great example, and this is why I bring it up again, Don, is we had a listener who always gives great feedback and thoughts on what we've talked about. And Jim Burke wrote in to me this last week, and he was commenting and sharing some thoughts on how people are surprised that they have to do other things that they saw or don't necessarily like. Like, I know a lot of people who have been upset because they've gotten into a job and found out they had to do more paperwork, really, than they had hoped, and desk work. Well, he writes in about how he's an engineer. And how, Don, you know, he knew going in that he expected to do a lot of math, and probably a good amount of science as well at times. But what he didn't realize is the vast majority of his job would be sitting at a desk writing reports, and how if people take his report out of context, if there's poor grammar, if there's not super extremely clear writing and grammar, that there can be a really big problem with what follows, and how a lot of his time is spent truly being able to write very well and interpret and communicate what it is that he's doing, and how more of his time often is spent doing that.
Yeah, that's a great example. Oh, I'm so glad that he wrote in. Well, and I'm trying to think of a job where communication, I mean, I think that's obviously a great example, but there probably isn't. I mean, how many jobs would there be where communication isn't important, right? Like you have to be able to write those paragraphs. But it's true. Whatever it is that you are passionate about and want to do and you're gifted at, you know, for me, I wanted to, you know, go and teach and write and, you know, travel around and speak and all that stuff. And I thought, hey, that'd be cool. And, you know, maybe we'll make some videos along the way and all this sort of thing, do radio. And so I started a nonprofit organization. Well, I mean, Timory, what do you think goes into
You're doing exactly what I don't want to do. All the paperwork and the management, rather than doing it.
Well, there is so much paperwork, and I get that, you know, hey, eventually, hopefully you hire people to do some of the paperwork or whatever. But listen, life is multifaceted. Life is multitasking, right? You have to be able to do different things to really succeed, I think, at any sort of job. I mean, Timory, how many different jobs are you doing during the week? And how many gifts do you use? I mean, even this morning, you know, between the mechanical stuff we're trying to figure out with your car and the I mean, we're operating soundboards here, and you have to be able you have to be, I think, a well-rounded person. And maybe, I don't know, maybe people don't realize that when they're looking at education, that the math and the English and the everything else is important down the road, especially.
Right. You know, we're saying there's a reason for the full formation of the person, whether it's, again, like you're saying, the different basic elements of math, English, science, history. You know, you enter in and use these. Just like people are saying, you know, they're hiring college graduates who can't write an email. Well, that doesn't just have to do with a lack of grammar. That has to do with a lack of personal discipline, to be quite frank. And I think part of that goes into how we're so obsessed with productivity. I mean, even myself, I'll find myself just like slamming through writing this long email or text or whatever it is. And there's this desire to just keep producing and not do it well, in the sense that to not go back, review what you said, make sure it's clear.
Right.
And that's something really, really important.
Switching gears here quickly, Timory, before the end of the show, story this week out of the Washington Times, Planned Parenthood has a new financial partner that people might be interested in.
It is just absolutely atrocious. You know, we've seen over the last year, as, you know, there's been a change in public representation who are tending to be more pro-life after some of the last elections, which is, I mean, praise the Lord, truly, we need people defending the unborn and women, truly, from going through the horror of abortion. But like you said, Planned Parenthood has seen an increase in partners, huge corporate donations that have come in, flooding support of Planned Parenthood over the last year. But we're seeing an increase in organizations that are, or companies that are in favor of adult sexual toys, essentially. And I mean, it's vulgar to even talk about, Don, but we have to be kind of blunt here recognizing this.
Yeah, and actually this makes a lot of sense. Here's the story. So Planned Parenthood has a bunch of benefactors, as you probably know, and some of these are very large companies. Well, one of them is now Vibrant, which is a Denver-based adult toy shop that was established with the sole mission of supporting Planned Parenthood in the Rocky Mountain area. And here's what, well, I'm not going to tell you what all, you can probably figure out what they sell, right? Sex toys and other things. Well, what's interesting to me about this is people look at that and say, oh, you know, I mean, we should just keep Planned Parenthood separate. How? Planned Parenthood is not separate from all these things. This is the perfect industry to go with Planned Parenthood. The
Some of them, Don, are donating 100% of their proceeds to Planned Parenthood. You just mentioned one company. There's another company, no joke, titled Nasty Women Sex Toys, that are donating 20% of all proceeds to Planned Parenthood, and they believe they're fighting the good fight here. There's another one that I actually don't even want to say the name of the company because it's just so offensive. And they're looking to support Planned Parenthood through different merchandise, such as the Sassy Uterus t-shirt and tote bags. And I mean, some companies even have phone applications and like a phone background. And I just think there's no surprise that truly at the women's marches just a handful of months back at the beginning of the year, these people were wearing you-know-what hats on their head.
Right. Well, if you look at the history of Planned Parenthood and why we have such a large abortion industry, it should be no surprise that a sex toy industry would support it. And here's why. Abortion ultimately is about an extra contraception, right? It's about having more sex. That's what abortion is about. Don't let anybody try to dissuade you otherwise. It's about, quote, freedom, although it's not true freedom, but it's about, quote, freedom to for women to have as much promiscuous sex as possible, as consequence-free as possible. And of course, the consequence, and again, I hate to even use the term, but that's how they would describe it, the consequence, the penalty for promiscuous sex, historically, of course, is children. And that's how the founders of Planned Parenthood view children, as an unfortunate penalty, an unfortunate consequence of promiscuous sex. But because we know that promiscuous sex is the key to salvation, and I'm not making that up, that's their term, like, sex saves you. That's what it will do. We want you to have as much sex with as many people as possible. Just read the documents of people like Sanger and Guttmacher and Helen Gurley Brown and all these people. That was their philosophy. What you need to do then is to be able to get rid of those consequences through abortion. And so it makes perfect sense for me for an industry that encourages promiscuous, unmarried sex, children-free, like the sex toy industry, to support abortion. To me, it's all the same sordid story.
It's a clear connection, and you know, and it's not even some big surprise that we're revealing and that people are talking about. This is the industry they're in, like you're saying. And here's the big issue with it as well, Don. This is an organization that receives one of the largest amounts of taxpayer funding. You know, earlier this year, I went in working, writing a number of pieces and working with very high-level individuals who have believed that abortion is wrong, but who have defended Planned Parenthood. Even people of good faith who have defended Planned Parenthood over and over again, saying that they do good things and that they shouldn't be defunded. But here's the issue. If you believe that sex is meant for marriage, if you believe that there's a difference between men and women, it is clear cut. Planned Parenthood is in the business of encouraging physical sexual manipulation, sexual abuse, and sexual play as much as possible, with contraception and abortion being a part of that industry. So why is it that we are forcing people, our tax dollars, to go to fund Planned Parenthood? A private organization can do whatever they want. That's fine. And not that we wouldn't push against it and work to change hearts and minds of people who are going there. But for us to have to fund this behavior and these associating companies is atrocious.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's nonsensical. It needs to stop. Timory, quickly, any upcoming events that we should be aware of?
Upcoming events, I will be at the conference in Northern California, Santa Clara, in November. I'll be speaking at a number of parishes this fall, but that big conference up in Santa Clara near San Jose, Silicon Valley area, for, I think that they have things for young adults, for teens as well.
This has been Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.